You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, we're live, pal.
We are live. This is the dual post-fight show for Bellator 263 and UFC Vegas 33. We just wrapped up the Bellator 263 live press conference stream. We heard from AJ McKee. We heard from Mads Burnell, Scott Coker, Patricio Pitbull as well. And a lot came out of that event in Inglewood, California. A lot happened despite the card losing a little bit of luster throughout the week. UFC Vegas 33 was very entertaining. A lot of big finishes, a lot of good fights. And if you're an MMA fan, you were spoiled tonight. And we're going to talk all about this with all of you as we welcome you to this doubleheader of a post-fight show. I am Mike Kack. We got Jose Youngs. We got AK Lee. We got the man, the myth, the legend, Sean Alshadi, who wrote some great features heading into this event. So
I just realized that I have Sean's wrong Twitter handle.
Oh, geez. Look at that.
So I'm going to have to fix that at some point. That's funny.
No, that's good. If you want Sean's thoughts, just come to my account. We're in lockstep with all of our opinions.
Oh,
I feel.
No.
So when I tweet something, you could take that as Sean's word as well.
Yeah, that's fair. You guys speak.
This is what happens when we don't have Casey producing.
We're off to a great start.
Don't need him. God bless him. He's been doing great work all week on site at Bellator 263. Don't need him tonight. Don't need him right now. I should say we did need him tonight earlier. Don't need him right now.
We just heard from him a few minutes ago, so all the Casey Lydon fans were spoiled with Casey's presence. But Sean, let's begin with you, man. I mean, you wrote a couple of great features heading into this Bellator 263 main event, one on Patricio Pitbull and guys who had competed against him and suffered defeats at the hands of Patricio Pitbull in the past. AJ McKee, his rise, some of the legends of the sport who have seen him, you know, in the gym as early as 3 years old. To see what AJ McKee did tonight, how do you react to all that? Because that was just absolutely ridiculous tonight.
I mean, my goodness, man. This is just more of the same from what we've seen from AJ McKee his whole career, right? But I don't think anybody really expected he could do this to Patricio Pitbull. This was a true star-making performance. I feel like we use that term really loosely in this sport and in combat sports in general, calling people, you know, hey, he's a star. He's a future star. That was a star-making performance. Nah, man, this was an actual star-making performance. Patricio Pitbull came into here in the prime of his career as the undisputed greatest fighter, most decorated champion that we have ever seen in Bellator. And AJ McKee, this whole week, I've heard people make comparisons to this week to UFC 194 in a couple different ways, just sort of the way that it felt in the air of this young upstart guy coming up, and we've been waiting for this fight, and these two guys have been sort of staring at each other across the room for a couple years now, and it's kind of the culmination of all of that, and it really did feel like it sort of had that same UFC 194 vibe. Obviously, that was McGregor Aldo, and man, the way it played out, I mean, to do that to Patricio Pitbull in less than 2 minutes, and I understand the stoppage was, you know, some people have complaints about the stoppage, but that fight was going to end one way or another. AJ McKee might be, I'm trying not to be too reactionary, and this is a big might, but by the end of his career, we might be talking about this guy as an all-time great. This is really somebody who grew up his entire life in this game. He might be the first fighter that we have seen fully who was doing this from the very beginning, right? Like, he was 3 years old on the mats with Rampage Jackson and Tito Ortiz doing this. His whole life was really leading to this moment. And the way that he handled the tournament, the run that he was on through this tournament, making short work of everybody, and then the way that he handled tonight, it felt as though he just wise beyond his years in terms of the way he handled the pressure and the experience of all of this. Just incredible, man. Honestly, just incredible. AJ McKee might be the best featherweight in the world, and I don't know if I'm willing to say he'd be better than like a Max Holloway, but he is certainly in that conversation, and he might be the best non-UFC fighter in the entire world. I think he probably is.
It's an interesting point. AJ McKee certainly feels he's the best featherweight in the world. He even said thinks he's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world right now, and you know, when you have a performance like that, you could definitely put him in those discussions, AK. But Sean was talking about like star making performances. I don't know about you. I felt like AJ McKee was a star the second he walked out. Him walking out to the perfect song, nothing but a G thing. Everybody in the entire arena was rapping it out. Place went banana, as Pat Patterson used to say back in the old WWE days. I mean, he just felt like a star right away, just from the opening seconds. He walked out into that cage, and you just felt something big was going to happen. Like, this had big fight UFC pay-per-view appeal to it, did it not? Like, from the second he entered that arena?
Mike, I got the perfect song for you. Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world? A star is born, boys. A star is born tonight. People got that reference. I don't need to explain it. This was everything that I feel like. Where do I go from that? This is
good
everything.
Night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
We need to point out that it's like 2 a.m. where AK is. He is very tired.
This is everything that we said. We discussed like all kinds of scenarios that could have come out of this Bellator 263 main event. And a lot of them were positive. We said like, oh, if Pitbull won and it went this way, if it was a close competitive fight and it went this way, like these are scenarios that still could have been good. You know, there was worst case where if there was like a no contest, or if Pitbull beat him in definitive fashion and then ended up like running off to the UFC in the next 3 months, they got, I think, what is the best way that this tournament could have ended. And it was kind of what I expected, where I said we would get a finish, we would get one where it wouldn't make either guy look bad. I think it made AJ McKee look great. I think if you're a Pitbull fan, you can kind of go with like, oh, you know, he got caught. He got hit by a head kick, followed by an uppercut and then the guillotine choke. So, you know, there's still a sellable second fight, probably at 155 pounds. But if you were just putting all your apples in the AJ McKee basket, man, you were rewarded. You were rewarded in the greatest possible way. Like you said, from when he came out to his performance to how he handled himself at the press conference, this is a guy who maybe he never, you know, we're not saying he can become maybe like a Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar level star, but is this a guy who can lead a company, who can take a company like Bellator to another level? I definitely think so. I think there's a quiet charisma about him. A confidence. There's an in-cage charisma, which I think is almost more as important as anything else. The way he fights, you just look at him. If you had never seen him fight before, and you just saw him fight tonight, before he even threw a punch, you would look at him and say, "This guy's a big deal. This is someone I'm gonna want to keep an eye on in the future." And then he delivers the way he does. And you know, and now I hope people will dig deeper into his story. If they read stuff like Sean's features, go back and read those. Read everything people have written about him. Listen to what he said at the press conference. It was a great, great, great outcome for Bellator and for AJ McKee. And I won't sing again, but I will repeat that a star is born tonight.
I have to add too, just really quickly jumping in. I mean, we talk about tournaments, right? Like Bellator doing this tournament was very ambitious from the beginning. You have 16 guys out there. It was a really stacked lineup, but going back to tournaments, even back in the Strikeforce days, like there are a lot of ways tournaments can go wrong, right? We saw this from the very beginning. These two guys sort of on opposite sides of the bracket, the way this was playing out, it's like, man, if you could have drawn this up, Bellator could not have asked for a better way this tournament played out, right? Like this ultimate result is literally the best possible outcome that Bellator could have hoped for. And when do we ever say that about tournaments? Something that has 16 guys being able to be executed this cleanly, and really, again, just leading to this sort of result where they're getting this big showcase. This fight, this whole night had a big fight feel. It was very obvious that Bellator was the main attraction here this weekend over the UFC. And to see AJ really come through in the end like this, just an unbelievable tournament the whole way through. And again, like, when do tournaments ever play out this cleanly and this perfectly? Like, Bellator and Scott Coker and all those guys have to just be over the moon right now with how this played out.
Absolutely. I mean, look at the 205-pound tournament. They were like, you know what? We're just going to throw Yoel Romero and Rumble Johnson in the first round. We're just going to get this thing out of the way. We're going to make sure this fight happens. And then what happens? We lose Yoel Romero, and we still don't get it. So, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. How big of a star can AJ McKee be, Jose Youngs? Like, if you're Bellator, do you just send him on the Bellator private jet to, I don't even know, I was going to say Regis and Kathy Lee. I know that show doesn't happen, isn't around anymore, but like Kelly and Ryan Seacrest or whatever, like, do you just take him on the national tour right now and just get his face in front of as many eyeballs as possible at this point?
I tell you what, you definitely have to make him some sort of backstage interviewer at Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley. I mean, how many people watch that fight? Like, how many people are going to watch that fight that don't even like combat sports? Like, as much as everyone hates Jake Paul, or they I don't want to say hate, like, they dislike him strongly, they have some opinion or another, a bunch of UFC fans are getting, and I said this on the preview show, I don't know anyone that watches just Bellator. I don't know if they exist. I know a ton of people who watch just the UFC. So I know there are some people that didn't watch Bellator 263. Unfortunately, they missed out on an absolutely fantastic, magical night. I'm sure they're going to tune in to watch Tyron Woodley fight. And I'm also sure there's a whole demographic of people that are going to tune in to watch Jake Paul fight. You stick AJ McKee there with his belt, show that clip, show all his highlights, show his swagger that he has, put his face everywhere. That's step one, and from there, the sky's the limit with this guy, man. I mean, I don't think he said it. He had no bad answers at the press conference. Everything he said, I was captivated by. He has, Mike, and I don't know how much you watch American football, AK, but Sean and Mike, do you remember when, like, there was, like, that stretch of, like, 2 years where Clint Portis was, like, must-watch television? On like his post-fight scrums, where he would just, like, he was a fantastic football player, but you needed to know everything about this man just off of his scrums. That is the vibe I got from him. Or I just see this colorful character with all these belts and this bottle of champagne and this comically large $1 million check, and I go, I need to know everything about this individual. So stick him in front of everything you can, and he'll do the rest. He's not a guy you need to train for the media.
I only watch Canadian football, so for other CFL, I'll say a Milt Stegall. I think that we'll say Milt Stegall, guys. That's for my CFL fans out there.
Sure.
You guys know what I'm talking about. I'm sorry. Winnipeg Blue Bombers legend, Milt Stegall. Great quote all the time.
I thought you were going to drop Doug Flutie's name. That would have been a lot more people to know where you were going with that.
Only person who wears, you guys know. Anyway, sticking with fights.
I think going back to you, Sean, on the flip side, you get Patricio Pitbull, who handled this loss with complete class, complete grace. At first, he felt like the stoppage was too soon. After watching the replay, he realized his arm started to go limp, didn't have as much of a problem with the stoppage. So, two-part question. A, your thoughts on how Patricio Pitbull handled himself after, like, really his first true finish loss of his career. And then B, Captain Eric Albarracin kind of playing the villainous manager role in a way, and, you know, kind of having his fighters back saying, you know what, why are we doing this in the challenger's hometown? We should be doing this in Brazil. Does he have a point there?
Not only Patricio Pitbull's first, like, loss by stoppage of his career, but really his first actual loss since, like, 2015, right? Because the Benson Henderson one, that was just because of an injury. Like, that wasn't a real loss in the real way. So this guy hasn't lost in a really long time, man. All we know from him is winning. And I thought he handled it perfectly. He was classy. As you said, he didn't really argue with the stoppage much in the post-fight press conference. He answered everything, you know, Family Guy, he had his son there. And I don't know, I thought it was a really good showing in terms of a post-fight press conference for Patricio. I do understand where Captain Eric is coming from with a lot of the points that he was making about, you know, we're coming in here, we're sort of in enemy territory, we're the two-division champ, we're the Bellator GOAT, and we have all these things already stacked up against us. But that's kind of just, I mean, that's just what comes with the territory, right? Like, I think Casey mentioned it on the post-fight press stream, where it's an American company. Like, this is unfortunately for Pitbull, is an American company based in America. They're not going to go to they're not going to go to Brazil anytime soon. So all those demands are, not even demands, but requests, I would say, for the rematch, that's not going to happen. Like, I'm sure the rematch will happen somewhere in the United States. So I definitely understand and sympathize a little bit with what Captain Eric and the Pitbull team were saying. But unfortunately, that's just part that comes with the territory, right? When you're the champion of an American promotion like this.
Where else can you have this fight, AK? I mean, I just felt like it was so big in that arena. I just felt like the only place to have this fight. And I get it's AJ's backyard, but you can't have this fight in Mohegan. You can't have it in South Dakota. You just can't. Like MSG? Brooklyn?
You'd have
I hope you're not besmirching the good name of Uncasville, Connecticut, Mike. A place that is that has embraced you and you is almost like a second home to you.
I'm just saying you can't have that fight, that rematch in that building. Like tonight, you can't have that.
Tonight wouldn't have felt nearly as big if it was anywhere else. It could have been in Vegas, it could have been wherever else. It would not have felt even close to as big as it did, just being in the Forum and being in LA.
What's a good compromise, AK?
Can they go to the UK? I guess I don't know how long. When's the next time they're
going
to be able?
They're going to the UK for MVP.
Oh,
Lima
and
too.
Moscow too, right? And they're going to go to Moscow for Fedor's last fight. So they're traveling to Europe. I mean, split the difference. There you go. Take it overseas. I don't know. That's again, if home field advantage is such an issue for Coach Eric anyway, not necessarily for Pitbull himself, then yeah, do it. I mean. I'd say this somewhat flippantly because I agree. I think you have to keep it in the U.S. That messing with the time zone. This is a huge, huge fight if they fight again. So, the time zone difference is a lot to ask. I think for fans, and so I would not do that. But I mean, it's an option. It wouldn't be my first option. But yeah. Otherwise, there's really no way to avoid any sort of home field advantage for AJ McKee. I think again, you double down, have it somewhere in California again. He's the A side now. He's the A side of this feud.
You could have it at the SAP Center, I think, just because of Scott Coker's history there. That's an NHL arena. They've had a million historic Strikeforce and cards there, so I think you could do it there.
Mm-hmm. How far is LA from San Jose?
It's far. You're not going to drive there. You're taking a plane.
Okay. All right. I've never been to the West Coast. So
it's like if you lived in Massachusetts and you had to go to like I don't know South Carolina.
Damn, that far, huh?
Oh,
California is a large state.
California's big, man.
There's a reason.
Looks like so small.
There's a reason they want two states with NorCal and SoCal.
That makes a lot of sense. So that's the main event. We'll see what happens there. There's a lot of doors that can be open. We could do this at 55. I feel like AJ McKee, his 145-pound run is done. And I don't blame him. Like, there's no big challenges for him anymore. He just slayed the dragon, so to speak. So back to 155 he goes, or up to 155 he goes, and I'm excited for the rematch. It'll be very intriguing stuff to see the build, when it happens, where it happens, so forth and so on. So,
well, hold on. Let me cut it real fast. Does everybody on this call, do we all agree that that should be next, right? Like, the running this back right away, immediate rematch at 155? Because I'm seeing a lot of pushback from this online, which is surprising to me.
Why?
Because it feels like this is the most obvious next step. Like, there is already a story here now. Yeah. Like, this, I would be fascinated to see how AJ looks at 55 and how they do this again.
I agree. And they should put Patricki versus Peter Queeley too as the co-main. So if Patricki wins, they could just do a third pit bull fight with a different brother.
There you go. I mean, what else can you do? You're going to throw AJ in there with the winner of JJ Wilson versus Adam Borch, which would be like a fine fight. But
yeah,
it's fine.
It's not even close.
No, I'm not talking about – I like it as a martial arts fight, but there's no way they should do that next if they're trying to make AJ McKee a star.
Right. It's just – yeah. You know, maybe make that like an interim title fight or something, and then we can have some fun from there. Make a little mini –
unless they're just like, hey, Aaron Pico, come fight AJ McKee, which they would never do either.
Right. And I don't want to see that yet.
I don't think they would fight each other anyway.
What else stuck out to you? I thought the co-main event was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Really good fight. One of the best fights of the year between Emmanuel Sanchez and Mads Burnell. Mads Burnell gets the win. 30-27 scorecards. Absolutely egregious and ridiculous. I thought one of the big sour notes from this card was the judging overall. I thought there were a couple of pretty awful robberies. I thought Ilara Joani got robbed. I thought Brent Primus got robbed, even though that wasn't a very exciting fight. And the 30-27s for Mads Burnell were just awful. Like, I have no problem with Mads Burnell winning that fight, but 30-27, come on, man. Like, that's just brutal. Absolutely brutal. So that's, like, kind of like my sourpuss takeaway of all of this. But, AK, outside of the main event, what AJ McKee did, what was your biggest takeaway from this Bellator 263 card?
Well, I wasn't watching as closely as you guys might have been. I was also monitoring and – sorry, actually, I should say having to cover for our site, UFC Vegas 33. But as I told people before – of course, we live in the modern age. You should do everything you can, your power, to watch both fights. So, I mean, you know, the big takeaway was, man, the Nurmagomedovs, the Magomedov-Sharipov families just delivered. It was everything you we talked about how tough Manny Moro is, and we're not changing that. If anything, that makes Usman Nurmagomedov's finish of him even that much more impressive, that he was able to run through a guy like Manny, who is, again, is a tough out. So Usman is going to be, I think, the other name I would assume that most people are going to be talking about. A lot of hype coming in, even more hype coming out. But again, I wouldn't also sleep on Magomed Sharipov, who had an easier opponent, as it were, and took care of business as he did. So that part of this card really worked out well for Bellator. If as we kind of discussed before the show, if their goal was to have that one big main event up top and then kind of lift up all these other prospects on the show, then things worked out. Again, it would have been nice if Ilara Joan had got that decision against Vanessa Porto. Chris Gonzalez ran into a much more experienced Goichi Yamauchi, so maybe it's not Chris Gonzalez's time yet. But other than that, a lot of the prospects showed out. So I thought that worked out really well for Bellator on this night.
Sean, what say you, my man? What else? What was, like, outside of the main event, what was your biggest takeaway from this Bellator card?
Yeah, I echo what AK said. How wild is it how similar Zabit's brother looks to him, right? Like, you could have showed me various angles of that and be like, oh yeah, that's Zabit Magomedsharipov. Like, it's really crazy. Even down to the frames, like, they're both so lanky and tall for the weight class, but so skinny too. Like, I don't know. It's very bizarre to watch. But man, Coach Khabib out here just killing the game right now. Like, he's out here in contention for Coach of the Year pretty soon. He's another undefeated night for him, 3-0. And it really does feel like there is a Russian/Dagestani invasion going on in Bellator right now. Like, these dudes looked like killers. I don't know how to pronounce the name of the one protege of his that got that knockout punch on Daniel Carey, but good God, man, that thing was sick. So all around, I agree with AK. I think it was generally a very entertaining card. The Manuel Sanchez Mads Brunel fight, I thought it was a great fight. It did leave a sour note for me because I did score that Sanchez 29-28. I understand giving it to Brunel, but I don't understand the 30-27s. That to me is just absolutely egregious. Once again, I wish we could get some level of accountability from judges, because I would just love to ask those two judges, can you just explain to me what you saw? Just explain that round one, how you're scoring that for Mads Brunel or any of this. But of course, we'll never hear from them, so that doesn't matter. But altogether, man, I thought this was a really interesting and pretty fun night. And AK mentioned Goichi Yamauchi too. He is sort of their Charles Oliveira in a weird way in terms of Bellator. And it was fun seeing him sort of explore the striking game a little bit and get his second knockout of his career too. So all around, great stuff. Coach Khabib killing it. And I think Bellator really, really did well tonight, man.
What do you think, Jose? What's your silver medalist in terms of storyline?
It's Khabib 3-0. That's got to be the answer. Like, it has to be. Like, they're dominating the entire game in Bellator and the UFC. So that's my answer. I can't add anything else than what AK and Sean said.
I thought AK was going to go with Jordan, I'm going to win ski, not getting a win ski.
No, as I tweeted, it was Jordan, I didn't win ski, which was very sad.
Good fight. Brian Moore looked really good tonight. And Kiefer good Crosby,
good one for Georgie Kirkanian. Yeah.
James Krause, his new prospect, and Kiefer Crosby takes the L. But fun card, really good. Kudos to Bellator, well done.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free.
Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank & Trust. Members FDIC.
Let's head on over to the other channel, UFC Vegas 33. Yes. Again, a card that had just been taking a beating all week long and several weeks, for the last couple weeks even. So many co-main events had fallen out. We lost almost two more fights, and then one came back, and we ended up with just an interesting card. It was really exciting. A lot of finishes, some really interesting scraps. In the main event, Sean Strickland closes the show with a dominant five-round decision over Uriah Hall. AK, this is your event. This is the one that you covered, you watched. You watched this fight every second. Your biggest takeaways from Sean Strickland's victory over Uriah Hall tonight?
Man, F the haters, first of all. F the haters, especially us in the media, crapping over cards like this all the time, taking away from these fighters. It was a great card. I couldn't have been more wrong, literally more wrong about anything that happened in this card. I picked one fight correctly. It's not important which one. And I'm not even proud that I got one. I almost wish I'd gotten them all wrong just for the hell of it. So
I do have to say our picks, we have a picks channel on Slack on MMA Fighting, and oh my God, it's a car crash in terms of UFC picks here. I don't know that we could have replicated this bad of picks if we tried.
There was a lot of upsets. There was quite a few upsets. I'll have to look at the odds closely again, but I believe there were quite a few upsets, way more than your average UFC card. So we can't be blamed for that. But I was wrong about the quality of the card. Not that I thought it was going to be terrible, but I definitely was, you know, like a lot of us in the media, kind of criticizing it on paper, which I still think is fair, but the criticism turned out to be wrong. So that has to be said. I was wrong about Cheyenne Bays and Gloria DePaula. I was like, oh, this shouldn't be in the co-main event. Why is this in the co-main? And Cheyenne Bays, I think, is one of the stars of this card. It was an amazing finish. She had the mic skills, like Mikey always say, why she seems very marketable in the eyes of the UFC. She hit all those notes tonight, so good for her. There was a lot of good back and forth fights. I thought some of these might be showcase fights. Instead, they were competitive. It was a really enjoyable card. I still think the Bellator card was, I guess it depends what you were looking for. I do think the Bellator card, from what I saw, was better, at least as far as what Bellator wanted the card to be. But if you're this UFC, you cannot complain at all about how UFC Vegas 33 turned out, ravaged by injuries and cancellations. And if anyone tuned into this card, they had a good time. And if you're the UFC, that's what you promise people all the time. And I don't think anyone who, if you only watched the Vegas card, I don't think you regretted it. I think you had a very good time.
Sean, one question we've asked over the last several days on all of our programs is, would the winner of Sean Strickland versus Uriah Hall, would they come out of here and have all of us saying, this guy is a legitimate threat to the middleweight title? And I didn't think really, there's the question right there, will Sean Strickland ever fight for a title in the UFC? I don't think a lot of people really thought that we would be talking maybe next title contender, but Sean Strickland's been on a roll, man. He's 19-0 as a middleweight. He's 5-0 on this current run since he went back to middleweight. He looked really good tonight. Uriah Hall had absolutely nothing for this man. Are you buying stock in Sean Strickland right now in terms of title contention? Do you think he can get to the top of the heap and fight for a title? Can you see that happening after that performance tonight?
Man, what a crazy fact that we're even having this conversation, right? Like, who really ever saw this coming. Like AK said, I was on the Bellator beat tonight, so I was mostly paying attention to Bellator. I have to rewatch a lot of this UFC card. It was on kind of in the periphery for me, so I didn't see the fight too much. But oh my goodness, man! Now 5 in a row for Sean Strickland, 4-0 since he's moving back down to middleweight, and he's just a very bizarre and entertaining guy, like just in general in the cage, right? Like he's definitely, like, you can tell there's a difference when Sean Strickland is fighting than when a lot of guys are fighting, and that you can't say that about a lot of UFC fighters. It is very, you know, generic, I would say, overall throughout the roster. Like there are very few people who stick out like that. It's pretty crazy, man. I mean, if nothing else, Sean Strickland comes out of this absolutely proving that he is somebody who matters now at 185 pounds, which is, I don't think, anything that we would have thought we would be saying, you know, in 2018 when this guy was kind of just a middleweight who you look back on his loss, or I'm sorry, middling welterweight. But if you do look back on his losses, like the losses were to some really top level guys like Kamaru and Ponzinibbio and Zaleski Dos Santos. So, I mean, maybe this was here the whole time and he was just getting bad matchups and, you know, the weight didn't work out for him. But it's pretty crazy that we have reached this place with Sean Strickland, but we have certainly reached it, man. And I am really curious to see how far he can push this. He's 30 years old. He's really in the prime of his career right now. This feels like the run for him. So, man, I mean, we've seen this type of thing before, like a Matt Brown style guy just coming out of nowhere who's going to be a contender all of a sudden. I love it every time this type of thing happens. I'm really interested to see how far he can push this.
Jose, I don't know how closely you watched the fight. You watch the whole thing? Okay. Was this more? I didn't watch as closely as you, but I'm just gonna go by the different reactions that I saw on Twitter. Was this more about Sean Strickland just being that damn good, or was this more about Uriah Hall just not seemingly being there? A lot of talk about his mental state. Like, can he get over that hump? Can he just be there mentally and focused for 25 minutes against a guy like Sean Strickland? And from everything I saw on Twitter and from everything I kind of saw in the fight, this looked like one-way traffic, and it didn't even really at times look like Uriah Hall wanted to even be in there. So what's your sort of gauge on the fight and kind of the two different sides of the spectrum?
I don't know if Sean Strickland is an all-around better mixed martial artist than Uriah Hall. I just think this is an atrocious mashup for Uriah Hall. Like, Uriah Hall needs a lot of space to work. He likes to dance around. He likes to make a lot of magic in there and throw these, like, Tekken-style kicks and kind of catch you coming in. Sean Strickland's whole game is to just walk forward tight and just throw punches for days, and he doesn't stop, and then he gets you to the fence and he can take you down and wear you out. It's just a horrific matchup for Uriah Hall to fight someone that, A, can take a lot of damage, doesn't give him any sort of range to throw his spinning kicks, his leg kicks, his, like, that snap jab that he kind of catches people coming in a lot. He doesn't throw a lot of leg kicks, so it's not like Uriah Hall's checking a lot of kicks. It was just a bad matchup. Like, I think Sean Strickland just put together the perfect game plan to just get in Uriah Hall's face for 25 minutes and just never take his foot off the gas. And, like, I can't remember which round it was, but, like, he got Uriah to the fence and then shot him for a takedown, and then Uriah Hall stuffed it, and then Sean Strickland just broke free and then just kept going. He didn't get discouraged whatsoever. If he went step 1 to 3, and then if 4 he hit a roadblock, he just worked around the roadblock, and then he eventually got it. He didn't falter whatsoever. He was just the better fighter tonight, and I don't know if he's a better fighter, like a martial artist, but good luck, like, stopping that guy if he's just going to keep walking forward, throwing all kinds of punches. And how old do you guys think Sean Strickland is, by the way? I had to look this up.
He's 30.
He's so young. He is so young. I'm older than him. He's like one of the few elite fighters that I'm older than. But he looks like he's way older than he actually is. So I'm interested to see where he goes moving forward, especially with his big win on his first main event. I hope he gets another 25-minute fight, because I like watching the guy fight for 25 minutes. And I will add, I hope he never fights in front of a crowd again, because I love being able to hear him fight.
Yeah, I hope he can stay super active, too.
Let me just add really quickly, too. What a horrific birthday for Uriah Hall. Today's that man's 37th birthday.
Happy 37th, Uriah.
Oh my God, man. Again, that's not going to be one he's going to be wanting to celebrate or remember anytime soon. We've talked about this 1,000 times over the years with Uriah Hall, but what a bizarre and just utterly strange career
this man had. Like, I'm guessing at this point it's probably on the downslide. Like, I don't know that he's going to make a title run. This kind of felt like some sort of death knell on that sort of conversation, right? He's 37. He kind of relies on the fast twitch element of the game. That doesn't age well, unless you're Yoel Romero. But if you do this guy's career over like 100 times, I'm pretty confident that there's at least 20 of them where he ends up a UFC champion at some point. And we just, it feels like we just ended up with the weirdest, worst possible version of Uriah Hall's career. It's a real bummer, man.
I agree.
You know, it's, I like that Jose brought up that, like, this was the mental aspect of this fight was so, if you could see, you know, I know we talk about intangibles, but man, if you could actually, you could almost see the different mentalities of both guys being played out, especially when you consider everything we know about Uriah Hall and some of the mental blocks he's faced in the past when competing. And it felt so, so tangible tonight. And Jose brings up a great point. Like, Sean Strickland, if he failed at something, he made a mistake, he'd just go back at it. You could see the gears in his head aren't like this clunking around like they are with Uriah Hall.
Do you remember when we did this exact show after Kevin Holland lost to Derek Brunson?
Yeah.
And all I kept saying was I felt like Kevin Holland kept stopping at step two in a five-step process.
Right, right,
like he'd get to step two and then he would just stop. Sean Strickland actually completed every single procedure of a fight. And that's the difference between these two middleweight contenders.
Nothing will stop Sean Strickland from implementing what he is supposed to do. Right. He knows what he's supposed to do. And he's like, okay, I'm going to do that. And Jose, you'll appreciate this. It's, if you remember, you know, in the Moneyball book, I mentioned the movie, but the difference between like Billy Beane and Lenny Dykstra, right, is like they talk about, well, Billy Beane would make a mistake. And he was a huge prospect, a baseball prospect once upon a time, and he would make a mistake and just kill him. And everyone says, and Lenny Dykstra went on to become an all-star, and they were, you know, coming up to the minor leagues together. And they said the difference was Lenny Dykstra would F up something and just, he didn't care. He just didn't care. He'd move on and just whatever, go do his thing. And he went on to great success. And that's kind of what we saw tonight. And you could say the same thing about Uriah Hall in this fight. Anyway, you would see him lose an exchange. And just tonight, and maybe in some other fights, but tonight specifically, you can see this, like, the look on his face and his body language just kind of slumped down and drained. And it's like you said, he couldn't get the space he wanted. And his corner was getting frustrated. They were doing what they could to motivate him. But this is the Uriah Hall story. Amazingly talented guy, very thoughtful individual. And sometimes that comes back to bite him inside the octagon. And I think we saw that tonight. And I think Sean put it best. This might be the death knell on the, Uriah Hall. Will he ever compete for a UFC title narrative? It's this for me was I was a big believer he would do it. And now I think this was it.
Yeah. The numbers, 38-23 outstruck Uriah Hall in the first round, 43-22 in round two. It was 18-12 in round three, 34-24 in round four. Round five, Sean Strickland outstrikes Uriah Hall 53-26. He had his best striking output, best striking percentage in that fifth round. Sick performance.
Yeah.
It's a bad man.
And he doesn't care who he fights. He'll fight whoever.
Yep. He's a bad man. I'd like to see him. I already have a name in mind. It's a very popular one. We've already discussed this, so I'm not going to be giving anything away. As far as bonuses go,
to the next one, you got to tune into Honor.
That's right. We already kind of teased this. Jose even tweeted out talked about earlier, and to mixed reviews I saw. Bonuses: good. Cheyenne Bays and Melsik Bagdasarian, Contender Series alums, both got $50,000. Fight of the night went to Jason Witt and Brian Barberina, which Jason Witt won. He shouldn't have. Should have been a draw. But again, I digress. The judging should have been a 10-8 third round for Brian Barberina. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Great fight. A lot of good finishes on this card. Jared Gooden took a fight on like 3 days' notice. Gets a first round finish, his first UFC win.
Yeah, he killed a human being on ESPN.
Oh, God.
Chris Grutzmacher, Rafa Garcia is a great fight. Jin Yu Fry gets another win over Ashley Yoder. Zaruk Adashev gets his first UFC win. And then Phil Rowe, man. Guy's a bad man. That was a hell of a performance. I know he missed weight, so it kind of like takes away from it.
He called out in his post-fight press conference.
Who did he call, his brother?
No. He said he wants to fight Kamaru Usman next.
Oh, yeah.
Phil.
Shoot for the stars, man.
Golly. I like Phil. He's a good dude. good personality. Could be a star.
I'm pretty sure his reach is 1 inch shorter than Alexander Volkov, who is a 6'9" heavyweight.
81-inch reach at 170 pounds for that man. He's got to make weight, though. All right, let's go to the peeps. Take a couple questions.
There's a lot of them I've already thrown up. A lot of them are just saying, like, or wondering how Sean Strickland ever made welterweight, or how he couldn't put together welterweight. A lot of people are saying how soon will AJ go over to the UFC, this and that. A lot of our initial questions were about the stoppage between Pitbull and AJ, or Pitbull's team, not Pitbull specifically, kind of making excuses like the location of the fight and all that kind of stuff. We kind of touched upon that. So as the chat was going, I feel like we answered a lot of them. Though I saw a lot of this. Did Cheyenne get lucky with that kick? I've seen a few people ask this in the comment section.
Let me say this. I mean, the best answer you say is you have to be good to be lucky and lucky to be good. That's something that she trains. I'm sure that's a move that she's trained. It wasn't even, I don't think it was that. Some people were saying, it looked like it was almost illegal. Like, not really. I mean, very clearly DePaula's hands were off the ground. I don't think Cheyenne threw the kick thinking that she was going to get disqualified. No, I think there was a lot of skill in it. So as with any high level strike in combat sports, there's a little bit of luck involved, but in that case, no, it had definitely more to do with her training. And yes, people are saying she's lucky. I'll say it again, guys, you got to be good to be lucky and lucky to be good. She knew what she was doing, and that's why she got that finish. It was not just pure luck. Stop it.
There's like a big argument in our comment section about whether the kick was lucky or not.
Ridiculous.
Go back and watch Cheyenne Baez's like amateur fights.
She's back at Extreme. She's back at Extreme, right?
Yeah.
That's the first. The first place I met her was at Extreme, and Eric Nixick was like, "That she's going to be a monster." And the next time I went back, I was like, "Where's Cheyenne?" He go, "She moved to South Africa." And I was like, "Okay." But now she's back, so good on her.
She's
this line gets thrown out a lot. Cheyenne Baez is she's about that life. I will say that she's a violent woman, so she's good, man. She's got to get her ground game in order, as we saw in the Canelo fight. But man, she is a vicious striker. Yeah, didn't even take the stool. Sean Strickland
didn't sit between rounds.
He's such a nut, man.
He would like. I think after the first round, his coaches didn't even say anything to him. Like, he just stood there, just right. He just wanted to go back on. It's like when Tony Ferguson was like, "I don't need a stool. Let's keep fighting."
AJ McKee will go down as the Floyd Mayweather Jr. of the UFC. I mean, maybe.
I mean, he's got to get to the UFC first. Yeah, I know Bellator is not letting that guy man go anytime soon, man. I'll tell you that.
What does that even mean? Like, in what context? Okay.
Maybe. That's a weird. Maybe he's looking into the future.
Let me ask you guys. I'm gonna throw a question out here, because this is going to be a question we're all going to have to reckon with next week when we put together our rankings for August. I'm doing this right now. AJ McKee, is he a top two featherweight in the world?
Nope.
No.
Number three.
I have Volkanovski number one, and I wouldn't put him above Max Holloway either.
I mean, that's literally – I have him at three. I have Volkanovski one, Holloway two, and McKee three. But like,
yeah, he'll probably be
the third best 145er in the world. That's nothing bad to be, you know. I just think he could be, but right now in the year of our Lord 2021, July 31st, 11:34 p.m. Pacific time, AJ McKee is the number three featherweight in the world.
I kind of have a feeling he's the number two featherweight in the world right now, and I feel like Max Holloway is the best featherweight in the world. That's where I'm at. That's kind of where I'm at.
I think that's what a lot of people – I think Casey said the same thing. I think a lot of people didn't agree with you. I just – in my – because I don't vote for the rankings on the MMA Fighting's panel. So just in my mind, I default to the champion in number one. Like, even if – so, like, Charles Oliveira would still be the number one lightweight, even though I would probably favor –
that's ridiculous, though.
But I don't vote. I don't have a vote. Yeah, I just make –
because the UFC says this guy's the champion. Doesn't make him the best. Like, we know Dustin Poirier is the best lightweight in the world. What are we doing? Come on.
We should save this chat for a possible podcast about our rankings.
We'll have a rankings show. Your voices shall be heard. But I am not here for the Alexander Volkanovski nor the Charles Oliveira slander. People, shout out in the comments. My team Volk boys and my team DoBronx boys and girls, shout out, please shout out your support for these constantly slandered fighters in the chat.
Regardless of who's number one, I still would. So if you want to tell me Holloway's one, I have no issue with that either. I just think McKee at this point is number three. He could very well be number one. I think strength of schedule has Holloway and Volkanovski a little higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he on the pound for pound list now?
Mm-hmm.
Who, McKee?
Yeah, for sure.
There you go.
He could be he could be a top five lightweight in like a year or two as well.
Could be more than
get ready
that.
For those. Get ready for those rankings. There's gonna be some shakeups, friends. Oh, there's gonna be some shakeups in the most important rankings in the sport right now.
I can't wait.
AK.
There you go. AK. Future Grammy Award.
Oh, thank
winner.
You. Thank you, JXK9. Thank you. There'll be plenty more where that came from.
This is weird. This is weird. I've never thought of these two fighting before in my entire life.
I have no idea what we're talking about right now.
I have.
Wow. Jeremy Stephens sleeps AJ McKee.
I have never thought about those two fighting before. What a bizarre matchup.
Also, that's just ridiculous. That's absolutely not true. Jeremy Stephens hasn't won a fight in like seven fights at this point. Something like that.
We'll never know.
Well, we've gone time. Let's see what we got. One more. A lot of them now are just talking about rankings. Right. Oh, here you go. McKee jumps up to lightweight, wins the belt, and never fights a featherweight again, then it is exactly a Conor Aldo situation.
Yeah.
I would agree. All right, let's wrap it.
It's only 2:40 a.m. where we're at.
This was that moment. Listen, that's Azan Zaman. Thank you for the comment. Yes, this was that moment. I think for McKee on a smaller scale, a smaller level, but definitely as far as the fight that took him from being a promise of what could be to what is, beautiful stuff.
Yes, I better see AJ McKee on Good Morning America come Monday or Tuesday morning.
Also, Mike, I think a lot of people in the comments wanted you to know that Regis Philbin is dead.
I know. I know. I screwed up.
Michael and Kelly. No, Michael doesn't do it. Strahan doesn't do it anymore. Anyway.
It's also 3 a.m. for Mike. Let's wrap it up.
Give me a freaking break. All right, we're out of here. Lots of MMA. Remember, UFC 265 is going down next Saturday in Houston, Texas. Casey Lydon will be in the building. So we'll have all your coverage getting ready for that. This never stops, folks. The train keeps on.
We might have to move A-side to Tuesday because we have media day on Wednesday.
Oh, man, so many changes, but we're ready for it. So for Jose, for AK, for Sean El-Shaddy, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.